I have a feeling people who listen to this podcast will be like, she's such a bitch. Like, oh my God, why did they do this with her?
Yeah, we're having no fun at all on this.
Yeah. Like,
no, we love editing Becca. She keeps us from sticking our fingers in electrical sockets because that's the kind of energy that me and Chloe have.
Absolute chaos. But
I'll be funny.
Welcome back to the Grim Reader podcast, a podcast where we judge each other's books by the front cover and then do a little book review. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Nikki.
I'm Chloe.
Woo, we actually introduced ourselves.
We did very well that time.
And we actually did. Smoothly too.
Yeah. It was very smooth.
It was very smooth because the last episode we left it to like 15 minutes in. So
I don't think I even introduced myself. So.
Oh, we did. And the week before we didn't.
So if you came here for a professional podcast, no. But if you came here for the chaos, yes, continue to listen.
If you would like to tell us we're a professional podcast, give us some praise, then our Instagram DMs are open at the Grim Reader Podcast. I got my second dose. I'm a fully vaccinated sister. And we were meant to record yesterday and that's all I'm going to say. I got my cert, so I'm just... The pain, like, it was just tiredness of yesterday because I just had a bit of muscle pain. I couldn't get comfy and my neck has been sore anyway. But then what I went through yesterday is going to be so worth next week when I'm immune and I can go into a book or like a cafe and read my book with a coffee in a ceramic cup, not a takeaway cup.
No.
Oh, I'm going to be weak for myself.
Wait until you feel how weird it is. Like, I went inside for brunch last week and I was like, this is wrong. I can't be here. No. Take me back outside. It's lashing rain, but take me back outside.
I'd say especially seeing all the people in the lashing rain.
Yeah, no, like, it was just bizarre. Like, as in there was like screens between every table and everything. But like, I was like, with the mask, I was like, I'd like to keep it on, please.
Tiny bit more news. I'm following in Becca's footsteps. I'm going to visit Kenny's bookshop and Charlie Burns' bookshop.
Yay!
Oh, Charlie Burns is the best.
I love them both. They're so, so good. Like, you're going to love both of them. But like, Kenny's, like, their front desk, like, is made out of books.
Oh.
Oh, it's just...
I'm very excited. I'm really, really excited.
That I want.
And we also found a really nice vegan place. I can't remember the name of it, but Emmett was just on the hunt because he's a good boy.
Yes.
These aren't things I think of. I literally wasn't like, oh yeah, I need to find vegan food places. I was just like, yep, Galway. I just don't do itinerary or anything. I just can't. Like, I leave that to Chloe when we go to Paris and I leave that to Emmett when we go anywhere else. And he found a gorgeous vegan place as well. So I'm like,
it's not even a matter of like organization with me. It's just like, I want to know what I'm going to be eating. Like, I have to plan it like my every meal 5 business days in advance.
You see, I can do that sometimes. And then I'm just like, I'm not in the mood for this. I really don't want it.
I kind of like pissing in the wind. But then I do like pretending I'm like being a free spirit, but I'm actually being led to water. Like, I do like that.
She's a sheep. You are a sheep. Back to the podcast. In other very special news, sorry if you can hear Merlin beside me. She
again.
Is a special guest again this week, and she is currently looking for cuddles.
But that was right on cue, Merlin.
She's too warm. So if you want to see her, she is on our Instagram now.
She is. Her controversial opinions.
She's not controversial. She just doesn't like other animals.
She's a centrist.
She has hot takes.
She's not quite right. She's not quite left. She's
how
very
dare you?
Centrist.
She is such a left-wing bird. Left-wing bird? Left-wing dog.
Center
she
left.
She just hates.
She is the social democrat of dogs.
Stop roasting my dog. But I was about to say, in other special news, apart from Merlin, Chloe has a mic.
I do. It's finally happened. I finally got a USB-C adapter thing.
Because like,
and we're finally here. We're moving on up in the world.
Can we just say, we got a mic for Chloe's birthday back in
and Chloe
April.
Is a Taurus. Believe it or not.
Shocking stuff. She's a Taurus who's been in a 6-month meltdown.
She's a Taurus that took her time. Like she should.
Tauruses take their time. It's what we're known for.
Like you ought to.
It takes a long time to move this big bull body of mine.
If there's a big break there, to listeners, I got my brother, who's not in the house right now, got a delivery. And of course, Merlin being Merlin, she heard the bell ring and just went insane.
Yeah.
And literally opened the door a crack to like get out. I was like, I'm so sorry, I have a dog. And
yeah, big Merlin, vicious dog.
Merlin, like, she has this habit now. If you leave the door open, she will run. She'll run next door to our next door neighbors. And we found out recently, or mom told me anyway, that she has found a little gap in the hedge there and has escaped to the to the houses behind those. And like, you're bold. She was planning on
she
doing that.
She is not bold. You are a good girl, Merlin.
No, she's looking at me like,
oh, Merlin, you
I'll
good
fight
girl.
You. She's literally like, I'll fight you. How dare
you're
you
ratting
call
her
me
out.
Out.
You're being a snitch.
How dare you call me out.
Becca, in Merlin's words, snitches get stitches. Mm-hmm. Good luck sleeping tonight.
She's small, but those teeth are sharp.
Editing Becca better hope she saves the day by editing that shit out. Merlin.
I'm calling my dog out, like, because I mean, the thing is, though, mom was like, yeah, we couldn't find her. I went calling for her. She didn't come back. Like, a neighbor, like, the guy whose house she went into, like, had to bring her back, being like, is this your dog? Like, and pass her through the hedge. Like,
Merlin, the center left dog is on the run.
She's looking guilty. She's like, yeah, that was a bad move.
Oh, can I just tell the story of when Merlin was here and she was like, I have a Monstera plant and they're not toxic to pets, but they're not great for them. It's like if they ate loads of it would be very upsetting on their tummies. So like when Becca brought Merlin up, I just moved that plant into another room. And at first we let Merlin sniff around the whole apartment, and we let her into the room where the Monstera was, and she sniffed around, and we left her out again and closed the door and brought her into the other room. And in the meantime, people were going to use the shower in my room, so I had the door open and we couldn't find Merlin, and Merlin had snuck in right directly to the Monstera plant. And she was like, she gave me the guiltiest look, and my friend Kev walked in and Kev was like, oh my god, look at her face, she's after pissing somewhere, she's after peeing somewhere, she looks so guilty. I was like, no, she just knows this is the one place in the apartment she's not allowed.
Look at that face.
Look
guilty. Oh, hello.
Guilty. Oh, so face. Yeah, she is. She just loves having a little hunt around and
she loves a kiss.
But anyway, we're gonna go on to books, and Merlin has now got her what she wanted for like the last like half an hour of getting onto my lap. So
get the cover.
Okay. I like this cover. Okay, so this is The Miseducation of Evie Epworth by Matson Taylor. Okay, and there is two quotes on the front. One saying, deliciously nostalgic, hugely funny, and ultimately heartwarming, from Veronica Henry. And then there is another review down the bottom saying, like discovering Adrian Mole or Bridget Jones for the first time, by Joanna Nadine or Nadine. Okay, the cover is so cute. I love the cover
so
much.
It's so beautiful, isn't it?
It's like kind of duck egg blue background, and yellow kind of handwriting for The Miseducation of, and then big bold white writing for Evie Epworth. And there is who I imagine to be Evie Epworth driving a little kind of yellow convertible, like it looks like kind of old muscle car. And there's milk bottles falling out the back. And then there is cows up the top, so like it just the way it's done is really like lovely design. Like there's no outline on the cows or anything, they're just kind of silhouette-y cows.
The millennial
blobs, it's Canva cows.
Canva
cows having a munch on some Canva grass. And she is driving her muscle cart through the grass. Okay, so The Miseducation of Evie Epworth. I'm looking for clues from these.
Left the reviews on.
So, yeah, the reviews don't really give away anything except that I feel like this is a diary. This book is written as a diary because, like, the comparison with Adrian Mole and Bridget Jones. I think this is maybe a young adult book. even though it's Adrian Mole is young adult fiction, right? Like, you know, kind of paved the way for young adult fiction. I know Bridget Jones isn't, but that's just the vibe I'm getting off it. Okay, so we have deliciously nostalgic, hugely funny, and ultimately heartwarming. So nostalgic, this is, and that plus the car makes me think this is set in like the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this book is obviously about Evie Epworth. She's keeping her diary. She is a teenager who wants to run away from her small town provincial life.
What in this provincial life?
Evie Epworth. Did I say Wisconsin in the last episode? Because this is giving me big Wisconsin energy.
I think you did not. But
oh, did you?
I'm getting Wisconsin recollections, but
yeah, I think I might have said that.
Oh wait, no, that was Nikki. Like, that was Nikki in the last episode when she was like, "Is Wisconsin a town or is it a state?"
Wisconsin is a landlocked state. No, but it's giving me big, like, you know, American Midwest dairy farm energy. So Evie Epworth is like 17 years old. She's grown up on this dairy farm and she's literally like Belle in Beauty and the Beast. She's like, this must be more than this provincial life. And she, it like gets really into motorbikes and muscle cars and like, you know, she wants to like, you know, get with every member of Led Zeppelin and she just like, she's out. She's leaving these milk bottles behind. So she goes off to New York. She runs away from her family and she drops out of school. That's her like miseducation, and her education becomes like, you know, the mean streets of New York City. So it's just this kind of like fun, but like this fun account of like her time in New York City, and like she's going to gigs, like, you know, she gets a job with a mechanic fixing up like, you know, like vintage cars.
Oh,
like,
she's so cool, and she's like in the 70s, so that makes her even cooler.
That's the thing. And if you can't, like, her hair is really cool. She's rocking like, you know, a Stevie Nicks vibe.
Had the mullet before TikTok.
Yeah, she just kind of like, yeah, she's just vibing. Like, she's just really cool. She's a cool gal. And it's just her, like, little trials and tribulations. Like, cause it says ultimately heartwarming. I feel like, you know, she has this, there is a traumatic event. Not awfully traumatic, but maybe, like, I'm trying to think. Obviously, you have the whole, like, she's left her family behind, even though her family are just, like, good Christian Wisconsin folk. So, like, she kind of comes to terms with the fact, like, maybe she sees like some of her like cool friends, like, you know, who are only cool like, you know, during the term time, and then they go back to their like lovely families and stuff, and she's like,
oh yeah, like they're like wearing like leather jackets and like ripped jeans, but their moms bought them for them, and like
exactly like, you know, they bought them in Macy's, like,
yeah.
Like, that's the kind of crowd that she falls in with. They're very, very cool, but like they try and pretend they're like punk before punk was massive. Well, I suppose this is the 70s, like punk is big.
But they're not true, they're not anarchists.
They're not, they don't have the punk ethos. They have the aesthetic, but they don't have the ethos. And
they are the Paul Street, the Paul Street emos versus the web workhouse kids.
Oh my.
Precisely.
That was an extremely niche reference. And if you understood, then good on you.
You could only be from Cork to understand that reference.
Like, yeah, they're the ones who hang outside Central Bank. the book center in Waterford, every town has their,
we're
like,
getting,
you know,
more varied. Is it, would this be Chicken Hut in Limerick, Becca, or would that be a different
Are you gonna, like, lads, since last week she has still insulted Limerick, and I feel like she's going there again.
My point is that I'm living here. I'm not dissing it because I dislike it. I'm dissing it because it's funny.
Nah, lads, like, she's this close. Like, there's no gap between my fingers.
She can swan in from Cork. It's the Olympic. I wouldn't be taking that.
Nah, I'm not taking it, lads.
I discork worse.
You're allowed to discork.
I am.
You're just not allowed dis Limerick. You're not from here.
She doesn't even go here.
But yeah, so Evie starts seeing the cracks with like her group of friends that, like, you know, they're just in it for the aesthetic. But she sees, you know, they're all like, you know, I'm so independent. Oh, I'm on my own. And like, you know, this mean city can't handle me. And then they like go back to their like, they holiday in the Hamptons with their family. Oh,
she starts smoking weed and they're like, Chris, is that a weed?
Exactly.
Shocked.
Exactly. So, but it makes her kind of realize like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have like, you know, just sacrificed like, you know, like my family for this like dream of mine just because they don't agree with it. Like, maybe I should try and make amends, but like, I want to live authentically, I want to be punk, I don't know what to do. So she's getting like, you know, torn up over that. And then like, you know, she starts like drinking and getting really into clubbing and like, you know, gets herself in like loads of dodgy situations. And then like just has this kind of realization one night when she's like super like drugged up and is like, you know, this has to change, I can't do this, like, you know, drugs are bad,
I want my mom,
I want my mommy. So she doesn't tell any of her friends she's going, she packs up her muscle car, she waves the mechanic goodbye and says, I'll see you when I see you. And she goes back to her family, but she's all like, I love you, but I'm not going to compromise on who I am. And they have tearful, like, lovely reunion. And then her family are like, we changed our minds on everything and we support you.
We love that you're a punk ass bitch.
Exactly. Go to New York, like, become the best, like, you know, like, car person in New York City.
Put the balls off the bull on Wall Street, you punk bitch.
Exactly. And it's all lovely and really happy in the end. Ooh. And yeah, she realizes like she can have the best of both worlds. So go on, Evie.
Yes. She's a gentle punk. Go gentle in the night, my punk friend. You're not too far off. Is what I'll say. Boy. Now, Evie, it is about Evie Epsworth. It's not really in diary form, but it is very like her perspective. Mm-hmm. So The Miseducation of Evie Epsworth by Matson Taylor. So this is set in 1962, far off. The one thing though is Evie is like a doughty pet. Like, not a punk bone does she have. So Evie Epsworth
is pure
wondering.
Brie.
Yes,
she is a soft cheese girl.
We meet Evie and she's wondering, what kind of woman will I be? She's currently 16 and a half. No, 15 and a half, I think. And she's like, so far life has just been school, doing her O levels, working as a milkman and losing her mom. And her idols are Charlotte Bronte, Shirley MacLaine, and the Queen of England.
Oh my God, that's a picture.
I know, this is the 60s, baby. Yeah, no, see, it makes sense then. It doesn't make sense now. It makes sense then. You can so see. So Evie is kind of in the heights of like, what do I want to do with my life? What kind of woman do I want to be? And she decides that like, she doesn't really want to pursue school anymore. She's not sure. She's kind of humming and hawing about it. And her father, Arthur, doesn't really mind, but he wouldn't mind her marrying a farmer and taking over their farm either. But either way, Evie wants to leave Yorkshire and go to London.
Oh, it's Yorkshire.
It is. It's near Doncaster.
Aw, that's nice.
Hello, my friend Alex in Doncaster. This is your only shout out on this podcast because you don't really read that much and it doesn't apply to you, but you are from Doncaster. This book is about like, what's stopping her? What's stopping her from going off to London or going off to Leeds? Well, we meet her right as she's driving down the tracks of her country town. And she's wondering all these things. She's like, I'm Evie, fast as the wind. I'm Evie, tall as a tree. And then in brackets, 5'11". Like, she's really just in her own daydream. And all of a sudden, she sees a man in a field having sex with a cow. And she She veers off the road and crashes the car.
Please say that is not what I was expecting.
This isn't even chapter one. This is like prologue.
Oh my god. Jesus Christ.
So Evie is like injured, has spent weeks in hospital. And it's just come home. So we start kind of figuring out what Evie's life is about up till this point.
What would Queen Liz do?
What would Liz do if she saw a man having sex with a cow in a field?
What Shirley MacLaine do?
So, I was going to say Chloe. I was like, this is now Chloe's story.
That's unrealistic because I'm not 5'11" and I can't drive.
So Evie, we start learning about her home life. So it's her and her dad Arthur, but also in the mix is her evil soon to be stepmother Christine. Like, you know, when there's an evil stepmother, we do be Stan in the book. Like, it's my favorite trope. I love it. So I love when there's like the Christine in this book is literally Dolores Umbridge. She is like a pink tornado. Love her for it. I just fave villains of all time. So Christine, the evil stepmom, and her mother Vera have now infiltrated the farmhouse where Evie grew up. And Christine is only like 24.
Oh my god, parents.
Very young. Very, very young. And she's only a couple of years older and she's like enchanted. Evie's dad, her dad is kind of puts up with her. And now Evie never sees love between them, but Evie doesn't know what she's seeing between them. She's like, why is Christine here? We do. Big booby bitches be coming for your dad.
Sexy times be enchanting your dad, lads.
So Christine is money hungry and generally just horrible. And she's obsessed with pink to an unsophisticated degree. And Christine is like kind of trying to just get rid of Evie. She's trying to get her a job. And she just wants her to kind of give up on her dreams and just take whatever's easiest. So she gets her a job working as a shampoo girl in hairdressers. And Evie is like, when have I ever expressed an interest in shampooing middle-aged women's hair? But, you know, this is what's happening. Christine keeps kind of pitting onto Evie like, oh, it'd make your dad so happy to see you busy. And Evie being a good girl is kind of like, oh, fuck, it would. She kind of is pressured into things. So Christine is also trying to get her dad to sell the farm to a real estate agency who wants to build a big housing estate. And she also loves Montevani, but we find out later on that this whole time she meant Monteverdi. It's one of my favorite moments. This book is just funny. So Evie's neighbor is a woman called Mrs. Scott Pym, and she's like Evie's closest pal. She's an older woman, and she's just very, very good to Evie, and she agrees that like Christine needs to go because Christine is a scarlet woman. And Mrs. Scott Pym makes a cake with Evie to try and put Christine under a curse. Because Mrs. Scott Pym could never conceive a child, and she had this magic book and managed to conceive her daughter, Caroline, who's away in London. And she's like, oh, this will work. This will set the scarlet woman straight. The scarlet will drain out of her and all this kind of stuff. So they make a cake and they add all these mad ingredients, including like a button from Christine's frock. And there's a bit where like Evie is trying to like mash it like with Porter Mestel thing. And it's just not working. And they make it anyway. They give Christine the cake. There's all that comedy of like, oh, Arthur's going to eat the cake. No, 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 don't eat the cake, Arthur. That's Christine's cake. It's like this whole shebang. And Christine does actually find a little piece of button in the cake and is livid. So she wants revenge on Mrs. Scott Pym because she reckons that Mrs. Scott Pym was trying to break her teeth with the button. So,
is Mrs. Scott Pym like local witch?
Not really. Okay. She's just a local little mad lady and she's lovely. So Christine, the evil Christine, and her mother Vera make a cake for Mrs. Scott Pym that's got like horrible ingredients in it. And poor Evie is the one that brings it over because Evie doesn't really like, even though when Evie is like talking to Christine about this cake, Christine is obviously very bad intentioned. It's like, oh, bring her the cake, she'll love it. And it's like she's cackling, and like Evie just doesn't really get it. She's very naive, and she brings her the cake and it poisons Mrs. Scott Pym and her dog Sadie, and they're really, really sick. And Scott Pym is like really like coughing up her lung, and she actually falls down the stairs and is hospitalized. So, oh my God, it's so like all you're gutted for her. And then this is how evil Christine is, you know?
Lads, Nikki, are you giving us the whole
book? I'm not. I'm still in the very beginning.
Like, so, lads.
No,
Jesus,
no, no.
Like.
No, 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 no. This is where I'm going to leave you. Okay. Now, Mrs. Scott Pym is in hospital and her daughter Caroline comes to town. And Caroline is from London and she's the height of glamour. And Evie is just obsessed with her. And she's over to like watch the house and like watch the dog Sadie and look after her mother in hospital. And she is like, she just takes the whole town. Like everyone is obsessed with this girl. So the story starts to unravel. Evie's trying to outsmart Christine. She's trying to get her father Arthur to see her true colors. She learns more about her mom Diana and how she died and why Arthur can't talk about her. And this
Princess
book,
Diana.
I know it is.
Is it Princess Diana?
It's not. I wish it was, but it does. Unfortunately, that wouldn't make sense.
This is 1962.
Yeah, but this book, it's really magic. The way I would, the way I want to describe it is another hug from the BBC. This is just, this is a lovely warm book, and that's where I leave you on the plot. Now, an awful lot has happened, but this book's just great. So
I have forgot about the bit about the man having sex with the cow.
Yeah,
I can't believe
exactly.
The same book.
It's such a far away detail. It only gets brought up like in pivotal moments.
That's bold.
It's very, very funny. So the things I loved about this book before I give my rating is I love Evie so, so much. I want her to be like, I want to be her big sis. I just think she is a lovely girl. It's all written in her perspective and it's all written so well that like I read this on the Kindle and I'd say other Kindle viewers, you kind of forget what the cover is. And you kind of, if you haven't heard of the author before, you'll probably forget who the author is. And when I went to research the author, I was like, this was written by a man. He does so, like, he's brilliant. He's such a good writer because, like, Evie's real. Like, as far as I'm concerned, Evie is a real 16-year-old girl.
Men can be good, actually. That's the hot take of this episode.
Men can be good, actually. So she's a really charming 16-year-old. She's still very naive and she has, like, a big zest for life. And she's really kind and really fun. And she doesn't, like I said earlier, she doesn't often realize what's going on the way that the readers do because she's just so young and she's not akin to seeing the worst in people. So I loved this book. I would give it about an 8 or a 9 out of 10. I really, really enjoyed it. Just to give you a bit of background on Matson Taylor, who I just think is a fantastic author. This is his first book, but I'm going to read out his bio is like as charming as this book. So this is his bio from his website. So Matson Taylor grew up in Yorkshire, the flat part, not the Bronte part. He comes from farming stock and spent an idyllic childhood surrounded by cows, horses, bicycles, and cheap ice cream. His father, a York City and Halifax town footballer, has never forgiven him for getting on the school rugby team, but not getting anywhere near the school football team. Matson now lives in London, where he is a design historian and academic writing tutor at the V&A, Imperial College, and the Royal College of Art. Previously, he talked his way into various jobs at universities and museums all around the world. He has also worked in Camden Market, appeared in an Italian TV commercial, and been a pronunciation coach for Catalan opera singers. He gets back to Yorkshire as much as possible, mainly to see family and friends, but also to get a reasonably sized, or sorry, also to get a reasonably priced haircut. He has also loved telling stories, and after academically writing about beaded flapper dresses and World War II glow-in-the-dark fascinators, he decided to enroll on the Fable Academy writing a novel course. The Miseducation of Evie Ebsworth is his first novel, and he is represented by Alice Lutyens at Curtis Brown. He's a great guy. I really...
That is very charming.
I just have a great opinion of him because of how charming this novel is. So yeah, 8 or a 9 out of 10. I don't even know why it's not a 10 out of 10. I'm just going with my feelings. Mm. I think it's about a 9 out of 10. I'll settle there.
And yeah, 10 is like a book you're going to remember in 20 years level.
Yeah, you know? And this book is really charming and it just was exactly what I needed. Like, I finished it yesterday while on my my second vaccine come down. And it was lovely. It made the day nicer. So yeah, well done, Matt and Taylor. Ooh. I'm a massive woo. Fan and I can't wait for the next one. Woo, woo, woo.
So my book is up next.
Oh, do I go?
You're going to introduce me.
That's probably going to be edited out, but that's like a 10 second stare down of me and Becca wondering who's going to talk first. Okay. I'm looking at The Reading List by Sarah Nisha Adams.
Yes.
We know how to pronounce that name now. Yeah. We're very, very, Becca did her research and gave me a heads up before I said that. So it's a very, like, it rolls off the tongue so nice.
Yeah, isn't it?
I'm Sarah Nisha Adams. It's so nice. So I'm looking at The Reading List. And this book cover is gorge. It's beige. It's got blue text. It's got just above the title. It says a new chapter is just beginning. And there's loads of like open books, all of like varying kind of covers. They all look like different genres. And there's two little people sitting on top of two of the books reading. And there's also one man on the cover of one of the books kind of looking outwards. This is a very difficult cover to describe, but look, I'm doing my best. Follow us at the Grim Reader Podcast on Instagram and you can see the book cover for yourself, or you could just Google The Reading List, Sarah Nisha Adams. Okay, here we go. That was like massive plugs.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm proud of that one. The Reading List, I'm guessing. Now, I actually, for some reason, got like gifted divine inspiration here. And I think I have a solid guess for what this could be about. So I think this book is about a girl named Sadie. And I think she's very me. She's very whiny. She gets stressed super easily and is kind of always at rock bottom melting point. And she's always calling her mom the second one little thing goes wrong. It's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And it's not her being like a drama queen. It's genuinely, she does not have coping skills.
I just love how you're calling yourself out for your own whiny behavior.
See, I have coping skills, but my coping skills are whining. So it's not the same. But I will admit I'm whiny. But Sadie, however, she just can't. She actually doesn't have the grasp to deal with problems by herself. And she gets very overwhelmed very quickly. She's prone to stress and anxiety. And she's kind of not helping herself. She goes to meltdown twice a day.
What at me next time, Nikki?
She goes to meltdown level twice a day. She'll ring her mom her mom is like, I think we're getting a lot of her mom's perspective in the beginning of the book, especially. And her mom is like out at dinner and she's like, oh, hold on, Sadie's after ringing me. And you know, the way usually you'd be like, oh, give me 2 minutes there, I'll just take this call. She's like, give me 20 minutes. Because she just knows her daughter and she loves her, but she's like, like, something needs to change, Sadie. Like, you can't, like, this isn't good for you to be getting this stressed. And I think Sadie has a bit of a scare. And she has a bit of heart trouble because of how worked up she lets herself get. And when she goes to the doctor's like, you are under an insane amount of stress. He's like, what is your 9-to-5 like? And she's like, oh, I don't really have a 9-to-5. I'm actually working part-time. Because of how stressed I get. And she's like, I think she owns like an Etsy shop and it's all very chill. The community on Etsy really like her. Her work is really like, it never gets an awful lot of orders, but the people who buy from her are really nice. They're from the village. They all support her. She sells, I think she sells a combination. She sells like ceramic like kind of bowls with like petals in them and like all these kind of delicate kind of like little like teacups and ceramic bowls, kind of jewelry stands and a couple of necklaces and earrings. She sells very delicate things and they all have like petals in them.
She
and
tried
all these
to capitalize on the thing that relaxes her. I get
she
it girl
did she did So she's already left her high-strung job and she's just getting worse. She's getting more and more and more worked up because she just puts an insane amount of pressure on herself no matter what she does. So the doctor is kind of like, you're only working like 3 days a week and your job sounds super chill. You actually, like, she has a massive inheritance, so she doesn't even need to be working to support herself. Her family are quite well off and the doctor is like you shouldn't be stressed. Like, you should not be stressed. You need, like, I don't, like, he doesn't really know what to advise. She's tried medication, she's tried this, but he's like, you need to go and seek help and just get, you know, talk to someone about this. And you also need to find something that's gonna relax you and gonna, you know, give you downtime. Your hobby can't be your job and your passion and everything. He's like, you're putting too much stress now is art for you. You need something else. So she gets home and she has like a detox few weeks at her mom's house. And there's a couple of instances where like she's making tea for her mom and she forgets what her mom likes in her tea and she gets stressed. And like her mom is like, it's fine. Everything is fine. I'll drink my tea anyway at all, my love. And it's really nice to her. And her mom is like, I think you should read a book and you should just relax and maybe not worry about you. Maybe get invested in these characters and give, like, just step away from your own head for a couple of hours a day. So she gets her into reading and I think she goes through like Pride and Prejudice and she really loves it. And all of a sudden, because Pride and Prejudice is kind of romantic, a romance begins to blossom for Sadie. And it's very similar. She finds her own Mr. Darcy very quickly. And a couple of instances in the book start to replicate in her real life. And she's like, oh, maybe I've left myself open to this now because I'm aware this could happen. And maybe this is like manifesting. Maybe this is really nice. And then she reads another book. I think she reads... what could she read that could like manifest in real life?
Jane Eyre.
Yeah, I think what happens though, she starts to read a catalogue of books and she gets a little bit of the book in her own life. So she might read like Mary Poppins or something and she meets a chimney sweep and he's really charming. And she's like, this is bizarre. This is so nice. So I think as Sadie is prone to, Sadie starts to fixate a little bit and starts to use her books to kind of craft her own life. She accidentally reads Marley and Me thinking that it'll bring her a golden retriever. And when she gets to the end of the book, she's like, no, put it down. No. So I think Sadie starts to purposely seek out these books because it's called The Reading List. She starts
no
to
one
seek
let
out
her
these
read
books.
Normal people.
No, don't
let her read
girl.
My ear of rest and relaxation.
No. So she starts to seek out positive books and things. And then all of a sudden it stops working. She starts reading books like Slumdog Millionaire so that she becomes a billionaire. And she starts reading like Limitless and all these books about like massive fortunes. And she's kind of like, why isn't this working? And she starts to get stressed again. And her mom is like, Sadie, like, you're again doing this for the wrong reason, the same way you did it with your art. She started art as her way of coping. And when she found out she was quite good at it, she decided to put all the stress on it and make it something she was going to be known for and had to be great at and had to be amazing at. Mm. And she's like, Sadie, you're doing the same thing. And her mom kind of has a sit down with her and she's like, this is a cycle. Because the second you find success in something, you put your whole energy's worth into it and you put you don't want to see yourself fail to an extent that you can't let yourself succeed. You get trapped. And I think this is Sadie coming to grips with life and realizing that instead of reading books to make these things happen, she can read books to get lessons from them and leave them there. Not every book has to be a learning curve. Some books can just be read and enjoyed. And I think that's what this book is about. Even though I ignored the second character because there are two characters on the front of the book. He could be the Mr. Darcy man that comes in.
Nikki just called out a whole generation.
I did. I just gave myself therapy there.
I would read that. I loved that.
Yes. Now, this book, The Reading List by Sarah Nisha Adams, I literally just finished this yesterday.
And Rebecca cried a whole lot. She sent us a voicemail. It was very terrifying.
It wasn't. I was just overly emotional.
I know. I was so sad for you.
I just want to talk about this book with people. And I was like, I can't talk to you about it until tomorrow on the podcast.
This is the one that devastated you. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it devastated me, but like, it's not
in a happy way.
In a happy way. So this is a very recent book. It's when I looked at Goodreads, I always tried to get the publication, like year or date. This is a very recent book. It said on it that it was published on the 3rd of August this year, but I picked it up on my birthday, which is in July. So
some bookshops do that, because that Stephen King book I picked out was meant to be out on Monday and I got it on the Friday because they obviously got a shipment.
Odd, but I'm not going to, you know.
It could even be the UK or a different publication date for US or something.
It could have been the US date. But so Nikki's guess is 99.9% wrong, really. She did.
It was 0.1% correct.
It was point one.
Is her name Sadie?
No. Your little bit at the end actually about like learning from books was right.
Okay.
But that was it. And I was like, I could give her like 99%, but I was like, no. So we do have two characters in this book. The cover is gorgeous.
It's so cute.
So we open this book in kind of a prologue chapter. Meeting a character, Aiden, who comes back into it later. He's not one of the main ones, but he's sitting in a library reading. And anyway, this person arrives next to him. He doesn't really describe them. He's like, they're wearing all black. They just have a ton of books, like, and they're just scribbling, like, what is going on? And this person puts a list beside him of books. And it's just in case you need it on the top of it. And it's a list of 8 books. So he leaves it behind, and then we're jumped forward 2 years. So that was in 2017. We're now in 2019. And we meet Mukesh. And oh, Mukesh, he's so lovely. All right. So Mukesh is a lonely elderly widower. He lost his wife, passed away, Naina, 2 years ago, and he is absolutely devastated. Like,
old people is the saddest.
It's just, he is such a wonderful man, and like his love for his wife, he's just completely lost. Like when we met him in chapter one, I was crying. I was like, oh my God, I would do anything for you, Mukesh. So he's still grieving, obviously. He's battling loneliness. I mean, his whole life has really shrunk down to him barely leaving the house now. And his 3 daughters obviously care about him a lot, but they talk at him rather than to him. So like, he's completely on his own, really. And there's a day, I think his daughters are over and they start clearing out some of their mother's stuff. I think it's been a year or something like that. They're like, we need to get started on this. And they come across an old library book of hers that was never returned. They forgot to do it. And it's The Time Traveler's Wife. And he's like, I'll do it. I'll take care of it. And they're like, okay, all right. And we learn that his wife was a huge reader. Like books were her life. Like she absolutely loved it. And like his descriptions for reading, I was like, that's what I want to be like when I'm older. Like I want Mateo to describe me like this. And it was just, it's so lovely.
Do you have any of the descriptions?
I don't know. I don't have the book with me. It's upstairs. But I just start reading the chapter like aloud. I'd be like, okay, chapter one, let's start.
And this episode is 18 hours long. Yeah. Subscribe on Audible.
But so he starts reading this book because he's never been a reader, but he wants to feel a connection with his wife. And he wants to understand what her love of books was. And he just feels like this would bring him closer.
That is the most romantic thing I've ever heard.
So he obviously starts like picturing himself as the characters and his wife as a character and things like that. And when he finishes it, he's like, I want to explore this connection more. I want to read more books. So he goes to the local library where he meets Alicia, our second character who's on the cover of this book. Now, Alicia is a teenager. She's working at the local library for the summer, and she is not a reader whatsoever. And her brother is actually Aiden, the character we met in the prologue.
Oh,
so she was struggling to get a job for the summer, and her brother worked in the library before, so that's how she has the job. And she just does not like being there. She's like, this is the most boring thing I've ever done. And I was like, okay, no. I'm kind of feeling a little. So when Mukesh comes in, he goes up to her and she's already like, I'm doing work. Like, I have my headphones in, which, one, very rude for a librarian to do that.
Yeah, for like, sorry, like, you're on the job.
But he's there like, excuse me. And she's like, she ignores him. And then eventually she's like, yeah, can I help you? Like, she's so rude to him. He's like, oh, can I just want to ask for a book recommendation. And she's just like, what? Like, you're supposed to know that already. Like, go use the self-service machines. And anyway, she really messes it up. It's really bad. Really, really bad. And he ends up leaving. Like, now she instantly regrets it and things like that. And it's really bad. So, while she's doing the job, she finds tucked into a into one of the books is a copy of the reading list that we saw from the start. So obviously there's more than one of these floating around.
Mm-hmm.
And on it is 8 books. And she's like, right, I'm going to make it up to this man and I'm going to start reading these books so I can give him recommendations and try to like make amends. So on the list now, I'm going to try and go by memory so I don't have to look it up. Now, these are not in order. So number 1 is definitely To Kill a Mockingbird, which will bring back many memories for junior cert English students. I really enjoyed the book, but that's number 1. Number 2 is Rebecca, which is my first ever book I covered on this podcast.
That's so sweet.
I can't remember what the rest of the order is, so I'm going to go The Life of Pi is on it. Pride and Prejudice is obviously on it, and I'm gonna have a, like, neither of the two characters really like that one, and I was like, I'll leave them off, like, everybody
you
has
love
a flaw.
Them that much.
Everybody has a flaw, it's fine.
And that's why this book gets a 9 out of 10.
Little Women is on it. My Beloved, or Beloved by Toni Morrison, is on it. A Suitable Boy, and I'm missing one, The Kite Runner. So those are the 8 books.
I love Little Women so much.
I know. So he comes back to the library and she makes amends, and they obviously really close bond starts connecting them as the book goes on, and it's just one of the most wholesome friendships in the book. So we learn that Alicia has a very difficult home life at the moment. She is completely overwhelmed and really struggling to help look after her mother, who is suffering from mental health illness. And we don't quite get told what it is, but she has good periods and then she has manic depressive episodes. And she is in one of those at the moment. So her brother and herself are left to look after her after her father left years ago. So it's really, there are some very difficult passages to read throughout the book. I will say there are some sensitive areas, but it's all handled with a lot of care. And I think highlights that you don't really know what's going on in someone's life at all. And we kind of see that both characters learning life lessons from characters in the books. Now, I will say, like, it was hilarious with Rebecca. They were like absolutely scared out of their minds, like walking around and things like that. And it's really, it was watching them kind of throughout the book, like, you just watch these really lovable characters just coming out of their shells, getting stronger. You know, like Mukesh, like, he rebuilds his life, and I'm like, oh. Okay. Yes, go on, you beautiful elderly man. Come on. And like with Mukesh, he wants to get closer to his granddaughter Priya, who is a huge bookworm herself. And she was always really close to his wife because she was a bookworm. And he's just like, I don't feel like, she doesn't feel that connection with me. So he starts like reading, like telling her about the books he's reading, and like brings her to a bookshop. And I was like, Oh, it was like the cutest like relationship going through it as well. I was like, that just reminded me so much of my granddad with me. And I was like, I think with that personal connection as well, I was like, this is like, lads, when I say it was probably one of my favorite books I've read this year. Like it is, it's up there. Like it's just so beautiful. So, I mean, we do see some very challenging life events with Alicia and Mukesh equally, and it's difficult because, you know, you don't really know where the story is going with Alicia's home life, and, you know, there are some tragic things that happen, and I think with Alicia, you just want to reach out and tell her to ask for help. She really needs it. So, I mean, I will post a review and give some content warnings. There is a suicide in the book. It happens very close to the end, but I would just warn that is in the book. But yeah, I just love this book. Whenever I love a book this much, it's so hard to talk about it because I'm like, I'm just gonna ramble. So yeah, there's a really strong sense of community, especially I think when Mukesh and Alicia kind of start to like socialize a little bit more, because they're both really isolated. We kind of see that there are people there that just, like with Mukesh, we see people from his community that are just have him waiting on the sidelines for him to kind of come back, you know, and they're there to support. And the same with Alicia, that she does have friends who miss her. She does have there's this guy who's interested in her, but like he doesn't push it, he's just there to be supportive. So like it's a really lovely part of it. And I would say kind of the like grief is running through it the whole way, and how characters respond to that. You know, we see that Mukesh really kind of just shirks into himself and cuts himself off from the outside world. Alicia does the same. And there's also anger with grief, which I think is something that I don't often see a lot of times in books. And it's I think something that I enjoyed. It is like, I'm not going to say like I enjoyed what happened with the death that happens in the book, but how Sarah Nisha Adams writes about it is brilliant. So yeah, it is a really uplifting book, I will say that. Like
ultimately uplifting.
There are so many reviews on this book. Elaine Feeney actually reviewed this book.
Is that As You Were?
As You Were, yeah. She reviewed this book, and a lot of them say like it is for people, it's someone who loves reading, writing about loving reading. And I would say that it is, I found it very heartwarming, and it does pull at your heartstrings a lot going through the book, but you will cry, you will smile, you'll just absolutely love the characters. I was devastated when I finished the book. I was like, no, you can't.
And like this feeling,
this reading list runs through it as well, because we meet other people. Like they're only like a little chapter about someone finding the list and like how it inspires them to like, you know, to maybe connect with something and things like that. So for some people, I have seen reviews where they didn't like that, these little like short snippets, but I think it's just showing how far reaching the reading list is, and people discovering books. So I absolutely loved it. I know like the critique in me is like, or critic in me is like, oh, there's a bit of writing bits sometimes. I'm like, no, I'm just giving it a 10 out of 10. Like I loved it. Loved it. And
high praise indeed.
It will be one that I will remember for a really long time. And I think it's because I felt such a personal connection to it myself. So a little bit about Sarah Nisha Adams. So Sarah is a writer and editor. She lives in London and was born in Hertfordshire to Indian and English parents. Her debut novel, The Reading List, is partly inspired by her grandfather who lived in Wembley and immediately found a connection with his granddaughter through books.
Lovely.
It's so lovely. And I mean, her acknowledgement section is really lovely. She writes about her own reading list and like includes it and things like that. It was just, and she was like, she writes about like books finding you at the right time. I was like, this found me at the right time.
Exactly.
You know, so I've seen on Goodreads that she's got another book coming out in 2022, and I'm like, hey, I'll be on that.
Oh, good.
So yeah, it's high praise for me today, and I would recommend people reading it if you're looking for something really kind of heartwarming. It's a lovely book.
Hey, this is Editing Becca here. Just a quick little note that my guess for this book, Malibu Rising, is quite dark and does feature topics of sexual assault and rape. And I would not want to upset anybody or trigger anybody. So please feel free to skip this section. Chloe starts talking about Malibu Rising at around 1 hour and 6 minutes. So please feel free to skip. I won't mind at all.
So I'm looking at, I just called out the book anyway. I'm looking at Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid, who is the author of Daisy Jones and the Six, which I covered a very long time ago. So this just says the perfect beach read with the emotional depth of the ocean. Ooh. And it's a really pretty cover. It's kind of a beautiful pinky purplish sky and waves crashing. So it looks very tropical, which you think of Malibu, do you know? Do you know, they always say like Malibu rum, and it's rum, isn't it?
Yeah.
The person who doesn't drink is like, it's rum.
Three sober gals talking about rum.
Rum. I mean, the first thing, I'm not going to lie, the first thing that I hear, think of when I hear Malibu is...
My Malibu mom Barbie. In Malaga drinking no. Malibu with rum and coke.
No, is the first thing I think of is Malibu Barbie.
Oh, that's yeah.
That's the first thing I think of.
Isn't it Malibu like, Stacy?
Oh. I think it's Malibu Stacy, yeah. But I'm going to say Malibu Stacy Barbie, whatever. So what I'm going to say is that we are going to meet an overly privileged, entitled young woman. I'm going to say that she's like 20, I'm going to say 21, 22. And her name is
Stacy.
I'm not going to say Stacy, but I want something that like Shelley. Her name's Shelley. There we go.
Shelley.
So her name is Shelley. And she is an heiress. She is actually an heiress to like Malibu Stacy, Malibu Barbie. Yes, completely unoriginal, but or not kinda possible. Like
Gone Girl.
A little bit, but like. I'd say a lot more, like she's a lot more money.
Sound yeah. The Gone Girl klaxon.
We meet her and like, I'm going to say like, we do not like her. She has just handed everything on a plate. She's nasty to the staff. She has this clique of friends that you're like, all of you are nasty, entitled. Like she has no concept of what's going on in the world. I'm going to say that she's a Trump fan and I'm going to be like, ew.
Oh my God. She's like the new girl in Love Island who's a Tory.
Oh no.
Yeah. Do you know, she's not nice. And I'm going to say that we start off with her. Actually, I'm going to say it's set during the presidential election when Trump's going for the office, and she, all these reports about him with, groping women and that come out, and she's like, this doesn't happen, that didn't happen, like they're just going after a powerful man and all this kind of stuff. So immediately the dislike is there, and I'm gonna say that she's no ambitions and things like that, and we start to see that she's incredibly bored as the book goes on. I'm gonna say that it's a book that you just have to keep going, and I'm gonna say that there is one night she's out with friends at like this private thing, and it's all people that she knows, really up and coming people, like they're all wealthy as whatever, and she gets attacked, and she is sexually assaulted, and of course, as always, please skip my bit if this is going to be triggering. And she is, I'm going to say that she's badly injured. She's badly hurt. Someone, I'm going to say one of the barmen find her literally unconscious by one of the bins outside. the bar, whatever that it was happening in, and he brings her, he calls an ambulance and like brings her to the hospital, and immediately she's like, he must have attacked me, like I can't remember anything, stuff like that. He gets arrested, and CCTV footage shows that it wasn't him. And anyway, she's in the hospital, her parents arrive, everything like that, her grandfather arrives, and they're like, we want this all hush hush. And she's trying to, we see her trying to process what has happened to her. And, you know, she's like, I just feel so sore. Like, what's after happening? And, cause I mean, she's still slightly drunk. And the doctors are trying to explain that she was attacked, and police are there. And it's just like an sensory overload of all these people just talking and like, I mean, with her family, it's more self-interest of them trying to like not get the name out in the tabloids. You know, she's already seen as a bit of a party girl, and they're like, and her grandfather pretty much says like, whatever happened, like she brought it on herself. Like, we don't want an investigation into this. And she is absolutely just in so much pain, not only like physically, but emotionally, with all this. And like her father can't even look her in the eyes. So she's brought home. I'm going to say that one of the detectives is like, look, it's your decision if you want to go forward with this. And, you know, don't be pushed or influenced by your family. So I'm going to say that she goes home. She is literally kept under 24-hour watch. Like, her parents are like, no, it's okay, like don't contact anyone, like it's all right. And there's no mention of it at all in the news, like it's all hush hushed up. Like, there has been money sent out to whoever to like make sure that this doesn't leak. And she is just completely numb, and we see her really kind of having huge mood swings. She's literally screaming at them to let her out. She's like, I don't even know, like, do I need to get checked for STDs? Like, was that done? All this, and trying to reach out to her friends, they're not responding back to her. And this is going on for a few days, and she's not sleeping. Like, she doesn't want to sleep in case she has dreams about what, or nightmares about what's happened to her. And eventually her family, like, she's completely just locked in her room. Her family doctor arrives and just gives her sedatives to knock her out without telling her what he's giving her. He's like, look, this will help with the pain. Just knocks her out. And she's now kept on like high. She's kept on sedatives the whole time to numb her to this. So she starts having flashbacks to the night, and she can't quite see a face for ages. And she makes a plan that she is going to trick her family into letting her out. And she starts trying to act like she usually did. And we kind of see her as well in this kind of thing of really reflecting on how she acted before. Mm-hmm. And really kind of questioning anything that her moral values, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to say that Trump, when he is elected, like, she's like, oh my God, this is horrific. Like, how could I ever have supported this man or this thing? Like, she was like, I can't. Like, and she's like, we were completely disassociated with the real world. And she keeps this all to herself. And eventually, like, her family are like, oh, we're so happy that you're back to normal. And they're like, oh, there's this great event coming up. We'd love you mm-hmm. to go to it. Like, it's a family thing. And it's like a big press release for like whatever new doll they're releasing in the company or whatever. And they're like, look, you know, because some of them are based on her. You know, there is a Shelly doll and things like that. And it's like a new series of Shelly dolls. And she's like, this is total bullshit. Like, this isn't representation. Like, there's no black dolls. There's no Asian Americans. There's no Asian dolls. There's nothing. Like, it is Caucasian, white, blonde girls that you're selling. And anyway, I'm going to say that she rings the detective, and she explains that, like, she can remember some stuff. Is it too late to proceed with her case? So she starts meeting with them in private, all this kind of stuff. And She's at, I'd say this is going on for months. She's still pretending, but we can clearly see that she is really suffering from PTSD mm-hmm. now. And she tries to organize going to see a therapist. Her family completely quashes that and they're like, excuse me, what the hell do you think you're doing? And it's just horrific. So eventually she's at some party and she's now using alcohol to numb the pain. And she sees this man and she's like, oh my God. And she's just brought straight back to her attack. And she can see he's plying this other girl with drinks. She goes over and she's like, no, this girl needs to come at me, like get away from her. And she causes a huge scene and she's escorted out of the bar, like screaming that he is a rapist. And she calls the detective, all this kind of stuff. And I'm going to say that there's even, I'm going to try and wrap it up soon. Sorry. This is really dark.
Oh my God. You're okay.
I'm going to put in trigger warnings for this one. I'm going to say that the policeman arrives and she's like, look, I can bring him in for questioning. No, actually, I think what the policewoman does is she steals his phone and wallet. So he has to come down to the station. So that's her way of getting him in.
Genius. So
we just need a sample of your DNA. And he's like, why? Like, and she's like, oh, just like match it up with like whatever we find on the wallet. It's just extra procedure.
Can figure out what's yours and what's the other, what's the thief.
So it comes back as a match for hers, for her rape. And he is obviously arrested and her family come in and say that they didn't want this case be investigated. They want this man let go. Like they're not proceeding with it. And they're like, well, it's out of your hands now. Like, and it's her right. Your family, like it's not your family. It is, our protagonist's right to proceed or not. And she proceeds with it. I'm going to say she's cut off from her family. And I'm going to say that this turns into her story of like Malibu Rising. Like that's what people call her case because she rises up against her family and like Malibu estate and things like that. And it kind of ends on her feeling a lot more powerful and like ready to face the world.
And using her voice well, and like,
so that's my guess. It's totally wrong, and I
to be honest, thankfully you are wrong.
I thought so. Yes,
that was heavy. No, this is Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid. I was going to say friend of the podcast. She doesn't know we exist, but we've covered her before.
Yes,
so a friend. A friend from afar.
This is a family drama. Yeah, it's so it centers around the Riva family. And there's kind of two timelines going on. Most of it is set within 24 hours at the end of the summer in 1983. Let me just grab it's kind of a prologue to the book. This doesn't give anything away, but this is kind of what the whole book centers around. At the end of the prologue, it says it talks about how it is in Malibu, like as in Malibu in California, Malibu's nature to burn. That there's always kind of wildfires there, and that they happen very regularly. So that's what the essence of this like 2-page prologue. And it says by 7 a.m. the coastline of Malibu was engulfed in flames. Because just as it is in Malibu's nature to burn, so was it in one particular person's nature to set fire and walk away.
Ooh.
Oh, damn.
That's
very, very good.
It's very good. I was hooked on this book immediately. So yeah, our two timelines are centered around this party at the Riva household in 1983. This is about the Riva children. So there's four Riva children, Nina, Hud, Jay, and Kit. So Nina,
they all have really LA names.
Very LA. And their parents are Mick and June. And we follow Mick and June's kind of love story from the 1950s. But yeah, no, we're put right in the middle of it. We're like getting the timeline leading up to this mad party that Nina holds every year at the end of the summer. So we find out about Nina. Nina is like a famous model. She's married to like this tennis pro. And they live in like this like beautiful like glass house like right on the cliff in Malibu. They host this wild party that like the whole like, you know, Hollywood elite come to, like, you know, the artists, the models, the actors, the musicians, everyone piles to this party every year. And like, if you are cool enough to know that this party is happening, you're invited. So yeah, Nina's famous model. Then we have her younger brothers, Hud and Jay, who are twins. Allegedly. And Jay is a championship surfer, and he's this like really strong slim man. And then Hud is like, he's just different. He like doesn't look like the rest of them. He's really kind of like he's like really stocky and like well built. And Hud is a famous photographer, and him and Jay are kind of like a double act. Like, Jay does all the surfing championships, Hud takes all the photographs, like the winning shots of him that get on like the cover of all the famous surfing magazines and everything. And then Kit is the little sister, and she's kind of like the one that they dote on, but she
is her name Kitty?
Catherine, I think, but she goes by Kit. And Kit is tough as nails, boy. And she is tough out.
And now,
you kind of think, like, Nina is, like, so established and she's married and she has this amazing house. You think, like, high-flying in her 30s and stuff. No, like, all the siblings are really young. I think Nina's 25, we find out. Hud and Jay are 22 or 3. Mm. And Kit is 20. So, like, you know, it's all very star-studded and we kind of, like, we get a shifting perspective with each chapter that we focus on Nina, then we'll focus on Hud and Jay and Kit all separately. So that's one timeline. The other timeline, mm-hmm. then we go back to 1956.
The love story.
Yes, when Mick and June meet, and June is like a small town girl, and like she's from Malibu, like before Malibu became like the place for all the cool kids to go. So like it was really just like kind of desert town. Right by the beach, and her parents have a seafood restaurant, Pacific Fish, and she works there, and she's just like, she thinks she's destined for something bigger than this, and like she loves her family, but like the kind of like there's tension over this that they don't understand why she's not happy to take over the restaurant. Then one day on the beach, she like goes off before her shift at the restaurant. She goes down to the beach, and like this beautiful specimen of a man like comes up to her and just tells her that she's the most beautiful thing he's ever seen, and like, I'd really like to take you out sometime. And so it's very like this like gorgeous whirlwind romance. And he's like, you know, I'm a musician, and he's like, I'm gonna make it, and like, you know, I'm gonna be the most famous man, and I'll provide for you. And she has this idea that she really wants like a little house by the sea with like two sinks so they can brush their teeth together, and like
it's with one sink, my friends. Be romantic.
This came up in another book as well, and I was like, what's the deal with two sinks? Like,
I brush my teeth with Emmett we brush our teeth together all the time. One sink.
I think it's a very American thing to have two separate sinks.
It's so strange to me.
It is, because it's in an awful lot of movies as well. They always have two sinks.
And I was like, you can brush your teeth at the same time. You're not leaving the tap running. Like, well, what's going on here? So yeah, I just found that that's a detail I found strange. But yeah, we see Mick as he gets like, you know, more and more famous, and like his relationship with June, and like, you know, how he's promising her the sun, moon and stars, but eventually, like, you know, things start breaking down with as he gets more famous. So yeah, we're jotting in and out of these timelines. Like, you know, from the 1950s we start seeing like when Nina is born, when Hud and Jay come into the picture, and eventually when Kit is born, and just they have a very humble upbringing, because I don't think it's much of a spoiler to say like Mick is off having sex with loads of women, and like for, I think in the book they describe like, you know, for June, Mick was like, for Mick, June was a chapter in his story, but for June, Mick was everything, and like, you know, just how difficult she finds it without him, and how she's like, you know, a like gutsy single mom, and she's like gonna do her best for these kids, but she is struggling so badly. Aww. And like Nina kind of becomes like the eldest child, and she's like, you know, therapist come surrogate mother, like, you know, that she takes so much responsibility for the family. And we see that dynamic, like, as they are in their 20s and kind of like doing things by themselves. So it's, we get this trouble in paradise thing, like Nina becomes like, she goes from like working in the restaurant to like becoming this overnight like massive celebrity. She's on the cover of like every magazine, like, you know, like people come to the restaurant just to get a glimpse of
the Gigi Hadid of it all.
Exactly. She's like, she's very, but like, she's really, really humble. And they just, like, there's this like love for the sea and love for Malibu, and how like Malibu is this like gorgeous, the most gorgeous place on earth. And you just really feel it, like, you know,
that's
like,
how we feel about Cork.
Exactly.
We love the stinky River Lee.
But like, it's just so like, you can smell Malibu while you're there, while you're reading it.
You can smell the stank of the River Lee. You can smell when we talk about Cork.
The sniffy River Lee, and our electric trees.
Piss Alley.
Up Cork.
Say, Becca, is that better? If I mock Cork, is that better?
It still doesn't, I still don't forgive you for insulting him, right?
But, yeah, so then, like, we're shifting back to this, like, 1983 timeline. We see, like, you know, how Nina's life has changed, like, her own marital struggles, like, a romance that comes between Hud and Jay, and, you know, Kit working through some personal stuff about figuring out her place in the world, like, you know, coming out of her brother's shadow, like, figuring out a lot of stuff about herself. And you just kind of fall in love with all of them, and you just want the best for them. Like, it's such a pacey book. Like, it's really short. Like, I was through it in half a day, like, altogether, I'd say.
Oh my god.
Like, very short, very snappy, and like, it's really, it really ramps up the tension like so, so well until this party where you're like, I know Malibu's gonna burn. But yeah, I'll leave it there with the plot. I will say, like, until like the last like couple of chapters, I was obsessed with this book. It was gonna be my book of the year. It was so well written, so good. Like, I loved all these characters, even though, like, you know, some of them were like kind of annoying and like really problematic. Like Mick. Oh, Mick.
Clammy Clem.
Like, you find out more about him that explains things, but he's still just horrible to them all. He's like such a deadbeat dad. Fun fact that I found out when I was researching this, in Taylor Jenkins Reid's other book, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, a little crossover, he's one of the husbands.
Oh, well, that's very cool.
But not in an obvious way at all. There's no, like, you know, referring to his ex-wife Evelyn or anything.
Is it like actually 100% him? It's not based on him. I love when they create their own little universe.
Yeah, it's this very cool little nod. And I'd say maybe there's more of that kind of thing, like, within her books, because she has like a rake of books and shows no signs of stopping. Where is it going with that? Yeah, the one gripe I have about it is that, like, first of all, it's anticlimactic. Like, it's building up to this massive crescendo, and the tension is so tight you can cut it with a knife, and then it just kind of let me down. It was so good, and like, look, it's satisfying in its own way, but oh, I wanted more. I just, like,
no, we wanted like Ben Stiller's drama.
Exactly. And you get that, and you get so much glitz and glamour and like all these like names and all these celebrities, and like the party itself, like, you know, it's real sex, drugs, rock and roll. Like, as in, like, there's literally people like going around with like plates of cocaine. Like, you know, the servers, like, when the hors d'oeuvres are gone, like, they're going around with like lines of coke on their plate. It's glitzy and glamorous, but it's not like, you know, like anything I wouldn't have thought from, like, you know, any kind of Hollywood movie about Hollywood, you know, like, it's nothing too shocking. And there's kind of too many characters, I think, and that really becomes obvious when you're trying to tie up all the loose
ends. I was surprised when you said it was short.
Yeah, like, there's a lot packed into it, and for the most part, it's so well written, but I just think, like, there's too many characters that you don't get enough time with. Like, you know, there's particularly like at the party, which is actually quite late in the book. It's definitely in the last quarter. But we start getting snippets. We stop going from this thing where we shift perspectives, like between Nina, Hod, Jay and Kit and Mick and June. Like, that's already quite a lot of characters. But then she starts giving us like glimpses of like, you know, just random people at the party and like, you know, what happens to them at the party, like in little, like, you know, 2-page snippets. And like, I enjoyed that, but the book is too pacey and short for that, I think.
Yeah.
But you kind of think like, okay, it's really like, you know, painting a picture, we're building up to this massive climax. But like, there's other characters I just wanted more time with. Like, we're introduced to Nina's best friend, Taryn, who's like Nina's like the most humble model in the world, and Taryn is just like, you know, I am a goddess, worship me, like the world revolves around me, and she's like hard as nails, and like, she has no doubt about her self-worth, and
dead
like,
right.
She like, I really enjoyed her. Like, she's so obnoxious, but the Yolanda
Hadid of it all.
Exactly. She's like, get me a bottle of wine. And she's like, not the wine that you're giving to these people, the wine that you save for special occasions.
No. The wine that you save for me.
Yeah, literally, like, give me something off the top shelf. Like, she's fun and I really like her. And I want to know more about their dynamic. Like, we're just told briefly how they meet at like this fashion show and they've been firm friends ever since. But, like, I just wanted more. Like, I think I could have done with more time with all of them. Like, we get quite a bit of time with Nina, but like, I want more Kit. Like,
it's a bit of a nice complaint that you love the characters and you just want longer.
Like, it's such a good, like, I'm sounding really negative, like, I loved this book, like, I really enjoyed it. I was raving about it the whole time. Like, I was trying to recommend to my aunt, and like, I kept like, you know, she was like, you're hyping it up too much now, Chloe, calm down.
We're doing it Thursday, honestly, club on it
until the last quarter. Like, I was obsessed, and it just kind of left me going, it could have been so much better. And like, I do wish it was honestly 200 pages longer, because I want more.
We want the circle of friends.
I think she does so short, snappy books though. Do you know, because Daisy Jones and, like, the Six wasn't very long either.
That's the thing. And like, she packs such a punch with such few, like, so little writing. Like, and I enjoyed it so much. And I just wanted to spend more time with them. And like, there's certain plots that just, I want to see how they play out. Mm. Like, once again, yeah, you're dead right. Really good complaint, but just a bit of an anticlimax, to be honest. And
what would you give it out of 10?
I'd give it a 7 or 8 still, because I did love it. I really did love it.
I do want to read it. It sounds great.
It is, and it's such an easy read. My God, like, I flew through. And like, I've been in a reading rut for a long, long time. And I just devoured it. I was like waiting for, like, you know, like little snippets of time that I could like go back to it.
Oh, cute.
It was really, really good. It makes me want to read more of her stuff, because like, so well paced, so snappy, and like, really good characters. And like, in one way you think like, Nina's too wholesome to be real, like, you know, like, how can she be real? But like, no, she's actually really well fleshed out, I think. And like, they have this really imperfect like upbringing, and like, they are forced to stay humble, and just, I love a bit of family drama. It was, I just wish the last quarter was better.
Write us a sequel, an alternate universe, please.
Exactly. Like, I want to read Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, because that's such a cool detail.
I love when I like, and they rarely do that, because I think it's kind of, it can be done really crap. Like, exactly. It can be just too obvious.
That's the thing, because it was not obvious to me at all without knowing The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Just like a bit about Taylor Jenkins Reid. Her background is actually in the movie industry. Like, she started off as a writer for the film industry, and she lives in LA herself now, and like, it just feels very real. She said like, when she was researching the book, she's watching this like old 60s like surfing TV show, I think it's called Jigget, like with Sally Field as the main character who really wants to be like a pro surfer, and it just feels very authentic. And like, because like she was like, if you listen to the way these people talk, like it sounds so silly. But like, no, it's never jarring. It's very well written. Yeah,
I'm adding it to my list.
Cool.
I've added both of those books today.
It
to
is
my list.
Great fun. It is great, great fun. And the guys, person who you think sets the fire and walks away, like,
oh, there's a just, twist.
No, it's not a twist, but it's just going back to it now. I was like, damn, yeah, that's good.
Oh, good.
Like, it's not the most complex book on the planet, but it is a damn good read.
I want to read it. It sounds gossipy and brill.
Yeah.
Three good books today.
Yeah. Yeah, what a fun. And they're so different.
Yes.
Mine
very
is so
different.
British. Becca's is so emo. And Chloe's is so
mine
LA.
Is not emo.
No, emo is in emotion.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's yes, very emotional.
Yeah, but, mine is. It's the BBC, the Marley and Me, and the Beverly Hills Housewives.
Well, I think it's the BBC. It's something that the BBC would never do because they won't make an adaptation of it because they're like, someone fucks. A man is having sex with a cow.
It's really funny because
they did it with Black Mirror.
This is one spoiler in the very beginning. She's like, oh, he's dancing with a cow. And then it's in the end, she refers to it. She's like, that was the man I saw fucking the cow. But it's like, I never realized it was like, she was so young in the beginning of the book. Now she's like,
now she's grown and she's
really,
aware of bestiality.
It's a really fun detail. It's so like, yeah. Just her processing power of it is hilarious.
To go there now. Yeah. But sorry, I'm slightly traumatized. But with that... I hope you enjoyed, and go follow us on Instagram, Goodreads, Storygraph. I think we're all going to make our own personal accounts or whatever. And what else? Twitter. I'm so bad at this. And do feel free to like message us about books you'd love us to read, or like if you read any of our books, like.
If
you do
want
not know
a recommendation, if you're in a reading rush, give us a message.
We just like talking about books. Like,
we'll send
clearly.
You a million recommendations and we'll overwhelm you and you'll probably never read again.
Exactly. No, Nikki. But until next time. Bye.
Bye. See you now. See you later now.
Take care.